This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tumotu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
A Day in the Life, a short story. Written and narrated by Simon Taylor. He enjoyed these days away. A change in routine. He smiled as he drove. A grand day out, in fact. Some people were not impressed. This could mean a 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. start. But it meant he would be driving on empty roads. Even better if his destination was off the main road network. Country lanes in the dark. Didn't get much better than that. He hoped for a mansion, something large and stylish. Often he wouldn't Google it first, just wait and see. To find himself driving up to a private mansion on a summer's morning, one that had that wow factor, was and would continue to be the magic moment. Rarely had he been on a set in a studio. Generally, it was to a city or town or mansion or railway station or some sort of period setting. A cathedral for several days had been wonderful. The weather kind, plenty of time to stroll round and savour the scene, often able to walk in restricted areas and being paid to do so. How good was that? He looked at his watch. He was making good time. A new part of the country to admire. The countryside could be so beautiful at this time of year. And with so little traffic, he had time to savour it. Yes, he would be there for 7 o'clock and, well, breakfast. Always free. And if unlucky, then a cold cup of coffee and an older bacon sandwich wrapped with a bit of kitchen foil. One of 50 or such greasy squashed foiled packages. If he was lucky, then it would be a marquee with tables and chairs and a proper mobile kitchen attached and the joys of a full breakfast. He was seriously ready for it. Yes, all in all, a day as a film extra could be fun. Of course, that wouldn't be the first job. That was always to park up, often in the middle of a field, and then a film set minibus, along with others, to get to the set. And there the queuing would start, first for the caravan or tent for hair and makeup. Rows of tables with mirrors and lighting and endless hair cutting or trimming and bottles and jars and brushes and a conveyor belt with the makeup artist transforming middle-aged men into diplomats or paupers. So if it was modern day, a quick brush of hair and then off. But a period piece and its hair being cut and chicken fat in the hair, well, felt like it, and sideburns or moustache. He always prayed it would not require a moustache. They always felt as if something between a wire brush or a dead rat was on his upper lip. Felt horrible. Sideburns and wig, he could always cope with. Actually, a good wig felt like a cheap facelift, pulling back the skin and making him look 10 years younger. And given his early middle age, any help was gratefully received. Then to costume and that discovery. The rags of the working class paper seller, or the top hat and tails, or an officer. A posh suit or uniform, well, you always added a bit of swagger as you walked out. Often you knew because you'd driven to the main studio or the set itself for a fitting several days before, checking that the second-hand clothes suited you and ensuring your hairstyle was okay. Longish for Victorian, super short for the 1920s, and super short again for the 1950s. And then on to the clothing itself. Of course, one of the strangest things was being dressed and undressed by young dressers, girls mainly, often in their 20s, and totally indifferent to you as you stripped down to your underwear, and they helped you on with your shirt and trousers. He laughed as he remembered the last production, a couple of weeks ago, when a man who was clearly new to the work was obviously nervous about undressing, and how he remembered himself until that moment. He hadn't even thought about the presence of a young wardrobe girl. It was amazing how quickly he became used to that sort of thing. Amazing also that it was a chance conversation that started it all. He was taking early retirement. When it was suggested, he'd go online and find an agency that recruited film extras. Fun for the day, and you get fed and paid. He quickly realised that if they wanted a recruitment fee or any other start-up fee, no matter the guise, steer clear of that company. There were plenty who only took a percentage of their earnings and nothing more. An online form and an attendance at a mass audition for photos, measurements, and there it was, a fully-fledged extra, or SA, supporting actor, as they now like to be called. He reflected that if you lived to a major city, then you probably did better. But if prepared to travel, then it could be okay. A few hoped that it would be their chance of success. But then you would have to be really lucky. Yes, period pieces were the most fun. Most of them seemed to be on location. A whole street in a city or town was shut down and suddenly taken back to Victorian times. Or a train station or a mansion. And then there were the vehicles, an opportunity to see or travel in coaches, trams, handsome carriages, although his favourite was being driven through a country town, resplendent in his First World War Army uniform in the back of an open-top car. Very stylish. And thankfully, it had been sunny, and yes, he had enjoyed the stares and looks of wonder. An afternoon to remember. Of course, it was not all fun. You had to be patient and stoical. A rude shock, but he quickly realised that he, along with all the other extras, tended to be moved and herded from one point to another as quickly as possible. A cross between cattle and wayward child is the way he was treated. Constant cries of, go to costume, queue here, next four in. Have you been to makeup? Then queue here. Have you eaten? Wear this. Stand in a line so we can check your clothing. And of course, wait. 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 Sometimes it meant hours between meals. Worst time, hours between drinks even. But these were rare, thank goodness. He knew it wouldn't be long before he'd pick up the vibe as to whether it was going to be organised or a disorganised day. He smiled when he remembered one day where he turned up to a small set, costumed and breakfasted. He'd waited by the set, and by 9:30 told to go and wait in a main reception area. He sat on his own and realised it had got Sky TV. And there was a cricket test match on. He sat there. Then lunch came and went. And then he was assured he would be used at 3 p.m. And then 4 p.m. And then 5 p.m. And so 5 p.m. arrived, and the assistant director arrived along with a power cut that took out the entire set. Half an hour later, and he was on his way home. The easiest day ever. And how lovely to be paid to sit and watch a cricket match all day. So why did he do it, he asked himself. Because it was still fun, standing around chatting to people from all walks of life, barristers to bus drivers, to doctors, to retired diplomats, to the list was fully endless. And of course there were the anecdotes. Which actors behaved well or not so well towards the extras? Famous stars spoken to or seen? Famous films that had been appeared in or series that had meant weeks and weeks of work? And then there was the magic of walking onto the set. The hubbub of conversation between director and the star, sound recordist and the cameraman, technicians, the many assistants and the runners and the extras. The whispered, isn't that what's-his-name from the Bond films or the American sitcom? All too often, familiar faces that took a few minutes to hunt down the names of. And then the equipment, giant cables snaking their way throughout the set, lights that could be banks of lights, often outside and directed in through windows, or lights that surrounded the action, or even, if it was set in a giant hall, a gas-filled balloon, and inside it the diffused light that lit but without creating any shadows. Balloons that could be 40 or 50 metres long. He remembered this was the case of a programme that was filmed within a cathedral. And then the cameras, costing hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars, cared for by one cameraman, moved and set up by a second cameraman, and then ultimately operated by the cameraman. Railway tracks often being set up down the middle of the set for those panning shots. And then the assistant directors organising the extras, getting them to either sit or walk around in an apparently business-like fashion, or miming conversations. The variety, the endless, quiet, camera rolling, scene 6, take 1, action. And then the scene unfolding before him. Sometimes exciting, others regal, at times pedestrian. And then the retakes. And after 5 takes, the cameras were re-sighted and the whole process started again, re-filming the same shot. He had known many a day where one scene could take half a day, especially big crowd scenes where the cost of a reshoot several months later would have run into tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not more. But always the buzz when the cameras started rolling. That was it, he reminded himself. It wasn't the money. He would never get rich or live on it. The work wasn't regular enough. But it was a step away from reality. A different world. No worries or responsibilities. Just turn up, do as you're told, and when you are told, and enjoy. And of course, being paid for the pleasure of visiting different areas of the country. Yes, it was fun. And who knew? Perhaps one day he could be discovered. This was Simon Taylor reading from one of his short stories. Recorded at Manawatu People's Radio, supported by New Zealand On Air. Take care.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.